This week on Art in the Air features Eric Giesemann, who searched for the perfect knives. He learned how to craft beautiful, custom-made knives that are both functional and collectible. Next, from his book of poetry, Lost, Aging, Gratitude, Acceptance, Ryan Steinbeck shares several of his poems. Our spotlights on Dunes Arts Foundation, previewing their 2025 summer theater season with Steve Scott and Elise Kermani.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews.
And we'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight and the Dunes Arts Foundation, of course, also known as Dunes Summer Theater. We're going to be discussing their 2025 season, which they've already had a kickoff. Their first show, which they brought a guest group in for Two Trains Running. We have the artistic director, Stephen Scott, and Elise Kermani, the managing director. Welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thanks, Larry. It's good to see you.
And, yeah, it's and always wonderful seeing both of you.
Well, you had Two Trains Running that you brought in, and that's successful. That's going to be running the week that we run this. And so that's how you kicked off your season, and it sounds like a wonderful thing to do. And that was at the Holtcraft. But now let's talk about your 2025 season and the different shows you have.
Okay. Well, our opening show is a play that has proven to be very popular around the country. It is the stage version of Misery, and I'm sure everybody is familiar with either the book by Stephen King or the movie that came out a number of years ago with Kathy Bates. This is a stage adaptation, and it's every bit as exciting and thrilling as the movie. It's going to be directed by John Hancock, who is a famous film director and theater director. We're thrilled to have him with us, and I think it's going to be a great way to start the whole season going.
Stephen, when I looked at your season, I thought, oh my gosh, this is a season of love in all its guises.
We're calling this season Opposites Attract. And I don't know if there are
well,
two
that too.
Better opposites than you can find in Misery. Our second play is very different. It is not scary at all. It's a lovely little romantic comedy called Outside Mullingar by John Patrick Shanley, who's probably best known for the name of the play right now. But he's written a number of things. He was an Academy Award winner, lots of things. And this is a charming little comedy that takes place in Ireland. A middle-aged man and middle-aged woman who kind of through the course of the play realize, although they've been neighbors and sometimes combatants, realize that they're in love. So it's another opposites that attract very happily throughout the play. So I think it's going to be a lovely kind of romantic comedy for our summertime visitors. And then the third major play that we're doing is She Loves Me, which is a beautiful musical comedy from the 1960s. It's been revived on Broadway several times. It is based on a movie called The Shop Around the Corner from 1938. And it basically involves people who work at a perfumery in Austria, And new a young woman who is a new employee is also a pen pal with a mysterious man who she finds out through the course of the play is the man that she hates working with in the shop. And we see how that relationship progresses. Some of the most beautiful music I've ever heard on a Broadway stage. And I can't wait to bring this to our audience.
And you're directing that one, correct?
I am directing that. It's a play I've wanted to direct literally for decades. Now that I'm in charge, I can choose the plays. So well, we can finally do it too. But I think I hope people will see why I've been so excited about it for all this time. And I think it's going to be a lovely evening in the theater for our audiences. We're also hosting a number of Dark Night events this year, notably a reading for Juneteenth in conjunction with the Michigan City government. It's a beautiful, at least remind me of the name of the play again.
Pipeline
by Dominique Morisot, which is a lovely, it's a very moving play, but it's a very much of the times play, talking about what happens to Black youth after they get through school, what are their prospects, and what ends up happening to them, and really making a plea for more opportunity, more understanding, and for a better world. So we're thrilled to be able to do that as a concert reading. Other events to follow, but those are the main ones, including our Broadway Cabaret, which will be happening in August. So, and our New Plays Festival in September. So I'm exhausted already.
Well, we'll turn it over to Elise because we want to give you a chance to talk about other things you have going on. I think you have a thing in April, kind of a meet and greet, and also how to get tickets and everything. We have a couple minutes here, but maybe tell us all about that.
Yes, we have a season kickoff party at the New Heron Bistro, which is the new French restaurant on Franklin Street. And that will be Thursday, April 10th from 4 to 6 p.m. And we'll have appetizers and open bar, and people can get their season tickets and learn a lot, get to meet us and learn more about what we're doing. And go to our website. You'll find out a lot more of what we're doing. We now have a calendar, full calendar that you can follow. You can also sign up to our newsletter so that you can stay in touch with us. And the website is dunesarts.org, dunesarts.org.
And can they call any number for the tickets?
I wouldn't.
Okay. We do have a number.
Have a phone number, but I think the best way is to email us or to go online.
And get a hold of you. So that's auditions are already in process here. You'll have this show cast. You have shows running all the way from May 30th all the way through September 20th, different events going on and different directors in and everything like that. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Dunes Arts Summer Theater Season 2025. They have several offerings there. And you can find out more, of course, at dunesarts.org. And make it. Thank you so much, Elise and Stephen, for coming on the show and telling us all about what you got going on this season.
Our great pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank Good you for another you. Terrific season.
Thanks. Yes, we
hope so. Yeah.
It'll be exciting. See you there.
And a spotlight extra at the Memorial Opera House, Elton Jeff and the Honky Cats, an Elton John experience featuring Jeff Kajewski, will be there at Saturday, March 29th at 8 p.m. That's at Memorial Opera House. Tickets available at memorialoperahouse.com.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hey everybody, this is Carolyn with New Blue, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Eric Giesman to Art on the Air. Eric Kraft's unique, gorgeous, custom-designed knives at Ash Blades, a boutique smithing shop he owns and operates in McCordsville, Indiana, where function and beauty come together in his work. He studied biological sciences in school and holds a bachelor's degree in biology. Knives have long been a source of fascination and interest for him. Knife making has become an avenue of creation and expression, crafting knives that can be passed on for generations. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Eric. It's so wonderful meeting you.
It is wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Eric, we always like our audience to hear your story. I call it your origin story. So we'll set it up by saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Eric.
Sure. I was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in a little area, on Pemberton Street, which interestingly enough has a small book written about it, about a flood when I was maybe one that happened on our street, where I think it was the St. Joe River flooded that area. But anyway, a nice, quaint little neighborhood in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where I lived the first kind of hunk of my life there. And my parents did separate when I was young, probably two, I think. Mm-hmm. And over time, they moved separately away from there. But I lived in Fort Wayne until around second grade, and then moved to the north side of Indianapolis in Fishers. Growing up, my mother was really big into art, and also both of my parents were really big into cooking. And my dad enjoyed a lot of outdoor recreation, from boating to fishing to hunting with my uncles. And so kind of growing up, not only was I immersed in food and art, but also in the use of a good knife. It was one of those things that kind of always had to be around, whether you were going to, you know, fillet a trout that we caught in a stream, or we were camping and needed to cut cordage, or I was in the kitchen with my grandma who had a little paring knife rolled up in her apron. It seemed, I'm not sure I really thought about it at the time, but it seemed like it was something that I was just kind of always around, something like that being used again, whether it was in recreation or in cooking with family.
And sounds like an exquisitely balanced childhood, I have to say.
Yeah, we had a lot of, we had opportunities to enjoy a lot of the wonderful things that our country and also other cultures have to represent. We, you know, we got to go to the lake, we got to go fishing, we got to, you know, ride our bikes, we got to enjoy those kind of third spaces that can be sort of hard to find now. We loved going to art museums, going to the science museum, history museums, places where you would see those, you know, 100-year-old stone Neolithic knives, or the, you know, the occasional axe head or something like that.
Piece of flint.
I loved those too as a kid, you know.
So what kind of art did your mother gravitate toward? So you had mentioned.
Probably, I would say for music, it was probably mostly classical, and some jazz music was mm-hmm. probably what she would put on the most. And then as far as art goes, she really loved the Renaissance period of art. And so it was a good bit of classical art. She went to, she traveled Europe often with her sister to really explore some of the art museums that were there. We always had beautiful art books out that I could kind of peruse.
Did you create art together?
Yeah. My mom was herself is quite artistic. And so even now with my kids from my childhood up into my own children, my mom is happy to sit down with some markers and a piece of paper or a coloring book. And, or, you know, probably more than once my parents have made our Halloween costumes when we were kids. Mm-hmm. So there were always little opportunities there where we could do, or we could do art. Both my mom and my stepmother also were really good at sewing. And so they made all kinds of different things when we were kids. Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of always immersed in some either craft or art going around. Or again, you know, like I said, a lot of outdoor recreation also where...
It's kind of interesting because when I watched the 12 Star video, you're drawing, and there was something so beautiful about the way you were sitting and drawing that reminded me of childhood, you know, like the intensity of drawing. It was just, I was so glad that they added that in because it just added a humanity to it. I don't know.
Yeah, there is not every custom piece has to start with a watercolor, but it's my favorite way to realize the piece if there are specifics that are needed ahead of time. If it's kind of a feel as I go thing, which sometimes it is, sometimes sure. Somebody will say, you know, just make me something beautiful. Then I just kind of feel it as I go. I let the material sort of talk to me as I work with them. But oftentimes, if we've got some specifics, my favorite thing to do is a watercolor that really brings the piece to life on page. It makes it vibrant. You get a good idea about the scale and the size, and
It allows you to dream too. Mm-hmm. You know, you can absolutely access.
You know, I was going to ask you about your degree in biology. Is that something that's present, or do you use that in other ways, or are you really doing the knife craftsmanship all the time?
Yeah. So my degree in biology came from that. Really, kind of was my first like intellectual love. I loved, again, I read lots of kind of natural science books, that David Attenborough style natural science books, and you know, Thoreau and Walden Pond and Emerson and things that were connected to nature was kind of my original love. And so I went on to study biology, and I really wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do with it. For a while, I thought I would try and do natural sciences, but there was one class, an advanced class that I took in at university, where the professor, it was all about science writing. So when you go to communicate science, you have to write in science language, and then you have to translate that into another language in order to communicate with kind of lay people. And so this entire semester was about learning how to communicate, how to write the science language, and then how to communicate that into kind of more standard parlance. And so we did a writing exercise that was a creative writing exercise. And I don't consider myself a particularly good writer or anything like that. I don't really even remember what I wrote, but my professor was like, you know, you might be better at this creativity bit. I think I see the way your brain is working, and I think you might be a little bit better at that, and you should kind of put that under your belt. Hang on to that, you know? And so I ultimately got a job in the life science field, kind of like you do when you have a degree. And it was a job that I really liked, where I got to do the science, where I got to do basically research on medications and vaccines and things like that. I really did love the science, but art was always something that I kind of held on to ever since I was a kid, something that I really enjoyed. And over time, that science job became more of a business management job. And that was never really something that I loved to do, which is weird, right? Because now I run my own business, but it wasn't, it's different. Yeah, it's exactly. Different. Yeah. And so, you know, I went from fixing these analyzers that are or running Western blots to try and help see if we can develop an HIV vaccine, to looking at spreadsheets every day and, you know, trying to compare what salespeople and what clients needed. And I struggled. So by now, we've kind of fast forward. I'm married to an absolutely wonderful woman. We have two beautiful children. But as happens with, I think, a lot of people in my generation, we start looking at the amount of income we have versus the cost of daycare. And it got to the point when she was pregnant with our lovely third child that realistically, one of us was going to be working for $0.
Right.
We were going to pay more in childcare than we were going to get, than we were going to earn doing our science jobs. My wife is extremely competent and also very much likes the work that she does. And again, at that time, I was like, spreadsheets aren't really my jam. Not my favorite thing. And I guess to rewind it a little bit, I had gotten a good knife for Christmas one year. I gave my parents this same knife. You know, my parents were remarried, so I gave both sets of my parents this knife one year for Christmas. They liked it so much, they got me the same thing. Well, like all knives do, it got dull. It's a kitchen knife. I'm cooking 2-3 times a day for my family. It gets dull. You know, what are you going to do, right? So I go to send it back to the manufacturer to get it sharpened. And they said, yeah, we'll sharpen it, but it'll take about 3 weeks. And I was like, this is the only good knife I have. I can't wait 3 weeks. So I endeavored just randomly to learn how to sharpen a knife myself. And so I started that process of, I think my dad gave me my grandfather's old oil stones that had just been sitting in his garage.
So lucky.
Yes, incredibly lucky. And so I just started learning how to do it, how to take a knife to a whetstone. And I really enjoyed that, really, really enjoyed that. And so the more of that I did, the more I wanted to do that in what little bit of free time I had, just kind of keeping our tools, you know, our kitchen knives up and running, that eventually it became a thing where, again, when we're kind of looking at our finances, it's like, you know, I wonder if I could do this. What if I stayed home with the kids and I just kind of did this on nights and weekends? And so ultimately that's how it happened, really, is that it was just a little hobby that I really enjoyed, that I had people say, hey, I would buy one of those if you want to make one. And I thought, well, I've sharpened so many of them, I suppose I could make one. And I made one and it was terrible and I loved it. And I was like, I got to make another one of these. And it was not any better, but I still loved it. And it was a process of development and growth and, you know, creating. And it just went off.
It uses all your senses when you're working with metals, because you've got the color of the flame, the color of the metal as it heats up. And it is just it's like it becomes intuitive, but you have to really know at what point do you take it out of the fire and quench it.
Yeah.
It's like so exciting.
Yeah. I was just going to say, there's a lot of focus in it. You cannot, you have to stay focused. You have to get all of your faculties zoomed in on a craft like this, because in an instant, you can ruin it or you can seriously injure yourself if you're not being focused and you're not being safe. And so there's an element where all of your senses are really focused in on this. How hot does that feel? You know, what does it sound like? What does it look like? What is it, you know, what is it? Just everything is really focused on what you're doing and what you're getting. And,
has to be completely integrated. All of those senses have to be integrated.
Yeah. If anything drifts off, you risk ruining a piece or injuring yourself.
Now, where do you work? Do you have the shop in your home or do you have a separate shop location?
Yeah, my shop is just in our garage. We've talked a lot about what it would look like to move the shop out into a brick and mortar. And right now, while I still have at least one elementary, my youngest is still in elementary, it's really nice for me to be here. So when he gets off the bus, you know, I've got a snack ready for him. I can help him with homework, or he at least knows where to find me in the shop if I don't already have the doors open or whatever. So it's very convenient for me to already have the space where I can do what I need. But possibly in the future, we'll think about whether a brick and mortar is the right next step.
And then you'd have a sales space probably if you had a brick and mortar too.
That's right. Yeah, there's a kind of a cool old garage, like a repair garage that's not very far from me in Fortville that's been sitting for like 2 years that nobody's using. And I keep kind of thinking about a place like that where, you know, there's the garage bay doors where they fixed cars that would just be the shop. And then there's the waiting area where people would, and I could easily turn that into a show space where, and right now I forge knives in part because they're relatively small and I don't have the space for some of the really big tools that you kind of have to have a commercial space for. But if I ended up with a commercial space, I could get some of those bigger tools and make things like carbon steel pans,
what would you want to make?
Yeah. So, like, I would like to forge out some carbon steel pans. Mm. I think that would be really cool. I mostly use cast iron pans, but I think forging out carbon steel pans would be really cool. Maybe getting into enameling. If I can forge them out, then I can enamel my own pans. That would be really neat. That would be a cool thing to offer my community, you know, some of the restaurants around here and stuff. That would be a really neat little.
Oh, yeah. That's very, it's like tingly to hear right. about that, because I thought you were going to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to do swords and do replica. You know, that's like oh, when sure. you said bigger, that's what I thought, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or armor that, or something, you know. But
yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, swords are always kind of in the back of your head because everyone always asks. And I have made one small sword. It was a Sabraj saber made out of race car parts for an event at the Indy Motor Speedway a couple of years ago. And yeah, that's always pretty fun. And you know, there's also another part of me that I grew up also enjoying sort of fantasy books. And so there's always and I also have kind of another side project with a very close friend of mine doing creative writing for fantasy RPG games like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff. And so, yeah, there's a part of me that's always, well, I could probably make some cool swords just to, you know, as a accoutrements to that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that's always in your head. But I would also like to forge some carbon steel pans. That would be really fun.
Oh, I think it would be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Eric, is there some form of, like, art that you know, you pretty much have gone down the path of this craft of making knives and the types of thing. But there's something else, and you talked a little bit on creative writing, but is there something that you want to do or have never done but like to do in the arts or area beyond this?
So I mentioned also the watercolor painting, right? But obviously that those are kind of small. Even if they're life-size, they're quite small. And so one of the things I've been working on developing is the ability to paint watercolor landscapes. Uh-huh. I really like painting in general. I'm not great at it yet, but I'm developing the skills. I painted a really big tree landscape recently that I really liked the lighting effect that I got on it. Not everything is great. The shadows are okay, but the lighting, I think I nailed it. So I do like to paint. I could try oil paints. I've kind of thought about it, but I've also, with my kids, done some acrylic painting of little fantasy miniatures, and my son will use clay to create these creatures, and then I'll help him paint those. And so there's always little art things that I'm kind of up to, but I think right now probably watercolor landscapes. When I have a minute to do something, it's to really develop my ability to do to paint landscapes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's relaxing it's like allowing your brain to relax in a different way. But yeah. I want to go back to knives and
sure.
I would love to know, like, because one of the things that I was so drawn to was your knife handles as well. And all the different exotic things you work with. So what was the first kind of commissioned piece that somebody brought their own materials?
The first one was a situation where someone brought some wood from their family's property. It was like an old black walnut tree that had existed on their grandparents' farm that had been a family farm for several generations. So realistically, we're talking about, you know, upwards of 100 or 120-year-old tree that had been on this property that eventually died. And their grandfather had cut hunks of it up and left it in his barn. And it had just kind of been sitting there drying forever. And he used some on some things and had a lot left over. And so they asked me if I could make something out of it to, again, kind of commemorate that property and that bit of their family. And since making that, I've done that a lot. A lot of people have brought me bits of, whether it's wood from a family property, or I've had someone bring an old work shirt. Their dad had a, you know, like a blue kind of factory shirt and I cut it into strips, and you created basically like a resin laminate out of it that I was able to incorporate into a knife. And so,
so beautiful.
Yeah. Working with materials that mean something to someone is always a little bit unnerving, because materials don't always do what you hope they'll do, right? Especially something like a tree that was a living organism, and you can't, you can never know exactly how it's going to react under the processes of being shaped and formed and stabilized and things like that. So it's going to be a little unnerving, but it's also really, really cool opportunity to make something special for someone. And then, you know, I try to utilize, one of my friends owns a, like a lumber business where that's what they do. They rescue old trees that come down, and, you know, whether it's from the Newfields Museum of Art, or I got the one from the track, or they just come down in people's yards around the area. Then he slabs them out, dries them out, and then offers them for sale or makes tables or whatever. And then he always has little hunks that he can't use. And so he gives those little hunks to me, and then I can, again, help that tree go on to live another life as another thing for another generation, you know?
An interesting collection of objects, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Shop.
Yeah. I have so much just random wood stacked up in there from different trees that people have given me over the years and stuff. It's pretty cool.
You know, we're in our final moments here. Mm-hmm. We want to talk a little bit about how people can find out about you, but also, like, if they want to do a commission or anything, how to get to reach you, and also, like, your website and everything, how people can find out more about you.
Sure. So I have Instagram and Facebook under Ashblades, Ashblaeds. And then my website is www.ashblades.com, Ashblaeds.com. And you can contact me via any of those. There are forms on the website that you can submit, or you can always send me a message if you prefer to use social media versus an email form. Totally up to you. I have a newsletter that lets people know where I'm going to be, because I do pop-up sharpenings around the city at restaurants and stuff, at markets and such, where instead of bringing your knives to me, I go out into the world and people bring their knives there and that kind of stuff. So that'll let people know where I'm going to be and what I'm going to be up to.
Very good. Do you have any upcoming exhibits or anything? Do you all go out and exhibit at all, or, you know?
I have not done any exhibits. I've kind of kicked around the idea with a couple of art shows, but because mine is artisan work, sometimes it's not quite a perfect fit. But if you come to any of my sharpening pop-ups, which I have one at Corridor on March maybe 21st, I think if that's the Friday, if it's either the 21st or the 23rd, I'll be there at Corridor Indy, used to be Nicole Taylor Pasta. And I'll be there all day kind of sharpening knives for people, and I'll have my work on display there. And that's usually where kind of where I have it, is at pop-ups.
Well, you know, those watercolors might wind up in an exhibit soon.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe I should submit one. It's not a bad idea.
Well, we appreciate coming on Art in the Air. That's Eric Giesemann. You can click on his picture on our website, and it'll take you to his website. And we appreciate you sharing your knife and sharpening journey and how that all happened, from biology and the transition. Eric, thank you so much, and sharing your journey.
It's lovely to be here.
Thank you so much.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts.
This is Dawn Diamantopoulos of Highland Arts Council, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Ryan Frederick Steinbeck to Art on the Air. Ryan is a poet and author. He graduated from university with a sociology and psychology major and a marketing minor. He possesses a rich and diverse set of interests and passions. Veganism, health, animal rights, and yoga are a few. He began writing poetry in high school in a creative writing class and is now the author of 14 poetry collections. His new poetry book is titled Loss, Aging, Gratitude, Acceptance, releasing in late March of 2025. It is a deeply personal collection. He is also working on a novel. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Ryan. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you. Pleasure's all mine.
Well, Ryan, we always want our audience was interested in what our guests have to say about their past, their, I'll say, origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Ryan.
Yeah, I started basically the how this whole poetry thing started was in college, or no, I would say go back farther than that, in the last year of high school. And I took a creative writing class just out of a whim, and found that I actually had something there. So I wrote this book about, or I wrote this poem about a bridge falling below, you know, from below your feet and everything. And not, everybody gasped after I was done. So I thought, maybe I got something. So, and then after that, I just started to write whatever came to mind. Had a few departures from family then, and then that really kind of brought up some more things way back then, and I started to just start reading books with from, you know, Robert Frost and William Wordsworth and all those great poets, and felt like, yeah, I could do this. So that's where I kind of started. And then I really kind of went out on my own and kind of made my own poetry after that. So, all the while just keeping up with any other poets and newer poets and everything too. So, that's really where it began and where it's happening now. So with those and those, up to the current, I guess, now. So
when you're working on a new collection of poems, are you working toward a collection, or do you do the poems and then you figure out the collection?
Yeah, I start writing when I have like one idea, and then it seems like it just builds from there. It's almost like it's in my head, but I have to flesh it out, and that's where it starts.
Yeah. It seems like Loss, Aging, Gratitude, and Acceptance. I felt like I was reading a diary memoir, you know, rather than, you know, a collection of poems. It read, you know, like,
yeah,
but I picked up your diary.
Yeah, that really is. I mean, and there's been no other collection of poems that's been like this. And I actually kind of wish I would have slowed down a little bit and waited for some other ideas like this before I just started, you know, releasing poems and books of poetry, because I feel like this is by far my best one yet. So it's just, yeah, very personal for sure.
Completely. But it follows, I mean, it follows a very, you know, logical path, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing which I was very proud of. It does have just a start to finish where everything kind of coincides with each other. So I really feel proud of that.
Yeah. It ebbs and flows at a really nice pace.
Yeah.
Well, usually Esther says at this point, and we want to dial you back all the way to your origin, like where you grew up, and any early interests in writing or other types of arts that got you to that. We sort of jumped ahead on your story, but, you know, we're interested in, like, we got the high school, that's where you started, but, like, what happened before that?
Yeah, but, gosh, man, it's been a while. What did happen? Boy,
was it a household full of, was there stories? Was there writing in the household?
To be honest, there was a lot of turmoil in my family, and I think that's probably where it started. My parents didn't have the best relationship with each other. There's a lot of, you know, things going on with them that you'd rather not want
to
hear.
Well,
about.
All they have to do is read the book, and I think they'll figure it out.
Yeah. So that just kind of stayed with me all through this. And, you know, I, with, especially with like The Decade of Sunrises, that book was really about the anger I had. And then with between them, my two parents or my parents. And then it kind of, you know, built from there. That's really, I mean, I'm not taking back what I felt from them, but I wish I wouldn't have said what I said to them about it. So that's what, you know, like The Decade of Sunrises is. And that's kind of where the whole family thing, that's where that, I think that sums it up in a nutshell, from what my childhood was pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, but it made it who I am. I think, you know, I think I became a better poet for all the stuff that happened in my early life.
Too. Well, since you're talking about it, would you like to read it?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, I can do that. Yeah, it's called The Decades of Sunrise, and then in parentheses for Mom. So, my memory grows foggy like the haze-filled, polluted sky rising from the east. It clouds my contentment for an hour each day until the sun decides to evaporate in the sorrow. I was so spiteful about the world around me. I struggled to determine good from bad. I didn't anticipate the consequences of my actions. Those hurting can be hurtful. I always thought I had the right. Now I know I wasn't justified. Despite my feelings, I could have kept them to myself. I burned bridges ahead and behind. Many suffered from it as they stitched their lives back together. I know it's already too little too late. If I'd arrived at this way of thinking before I ran my mouth, I would have never said what I did. Even though it's too little too late, I want to tell them I only ever wanted to do good. I'd give a decade of sunrises to take it all back if I could.
Wow. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so hard to know anyway, in any given moment,
yeah,
the impact of our deeds or words.
Well, yeah. We'll listen to some more of your poems, but you're working on a novel. Maybe tell us, if you can, a little bit about what that's about, you know, where you are in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. I have it mostly done. I'm just kind of, editing it and editing it, and I'm gonna send it to a professional editor at some point here soon. But that one, I just had a what if thing pop in my head. I'm not really a Christian or anything. I kind of probably follow more of a Buddhist idea than anything else, but you know, just in principle, I'm not by no means a Buddhist or anything, but I just thought, well, what if there's more than just one human, like, you know, Jesus Christ was, and what if there's just a bunch of them all across the country or things like that. And that kind of brought me to cover up in the Jerusalem, area, and then over to the Air Force Base. That's what I'm trying to say. And I brought that into, you know, the Jerusalem Air Force Base, where they're hiding that secret that there's only one savior like that. And they're trying to get rid of, we'll say, all of the other ones that have come along. So it sort of
borders on what you might call speculative fiction, or, you know, not exactly sci-fi, but what they call speculative fiction.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So how far along are you in it? Where, at what point?
I'm very close to having it done. I'm fidgeting with a couple of things, and I want to add a few things. While writing it, I thought of something else that would need to be in there, and so I'm just kind of almost kind of piecing it in, and I'm trying to figure out where to piece it in so it's in the timeline of my book. So, but I'm very close. I feel very, very
so has very, anybody else read it, Ryan?
No, not as of yet. My wife read it early on, and then I took a break from it because I was almost like I wasn't, I didn't think I was going to be able to finish it. And then as I, about 4 years later, I had these new ideas that now completed it, really. And, you know, so I'm just working those in, and I'm really excited that it's almost done now. So it's very close.
Well, when you come to your poetry, you talked about, you know, having an editor for this. You're going to send this out to an editor to kind of do that. Do you have anyone that edits your poems for you, or is that just something completely you do yourself?
I do have, like this time especially, I had one of the ladies from she did, and now I realize how important that is here. I actually went back and actually changed some of the stuff in this book too since then as well. So the one you have is going to be slightly different because I edited some more things out that were missing or incorrect. So
right.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM. So did you do the formatting on it? Because I always find that to be the most difficult for me, is the shaping of the actual, you know, how am I going to place the words on the paper? Because with me, I just write in one long stream, and then I have to decide what happens to it.
Yeah. This told me that that's what I have to do from now on, because I did it with this one and I love it way better than I've had with anything else. So I'm not going to trust myself anymore with that part of it anymore. So yeah, that will be what I do from now on for sure.
Well, I think this would be a good time to hear something else that you have. Why don't you tee up another one that we could listen to one of your poems?
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. It almost falls in the same gist of what we're talking about, but I had a lot of fun with this poem called Hey John, which I'm referring to John Mellencamp. And it's about, of course, death in a way, but, or whatever, heading that way, but, I'll just read it and go from here. So it's, Hey John, I've been a long time fan from a distance. Key West Intermezzo is my favorite. Thinking back to what you said many years ago about holding on to 16 for as long as you can, I disagree. I don't see how living can ever not be a thrill. Considering how short our lives are already, I know you were young when you wrote that, and maybe you think differently now, but here I am, just as curious as ever. The thrill of living will never be gone until I draw my last breath.
So, okay. Yeah. Now, what would you describe your poetry style? I remember one time someone canned the term prosatry, where you write in kind of a prose style as opposed to like that. So, you know, describe, do you have that in your mind, that that's your style? Or?
Yeah. I think that's part of it. And then it's just kind of just free form too, you know, just probably the same thing, just a different name for sure. So I've only done a few haikus here and there, a few different things. But I feel like it's very constrictive and maybe that's the wrong thing to think, but yeah, I just write, I think.
I see.
You know, most of the time. And it falls into poetry, so to speak, somewhat, you know.
Right. I mean, just because you don't use the verse format, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not poetry. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting style. Is there, now I know with this book, you're wrapping it up, but is there, and you got the novel that's almost ready. Is there something down the road, like poetry-wise, that you're thinking of, thinking ahead?
Yeah, it almost will kind of be a loose part two of this one. It's called Confluent. It's going to be called Confluence. And I think it's going to bring everything together with this one and, you know, that one together. I think it's going to almost be the, closure to the whole thing we were talking about with my parents and everything. So
right.
It's going to be a little more lighthearted, I think, as well.
Do you write daily? Is it something that you feel compelled to do every day?
Mostly, yeah. Even if it's just a few words here and there, like the other day I opened up the Confluence book and just wrote a few things down, just jotted down, okay, I want that in there. And then, a few days later, I'll probably do that again, and just as it comes to me. I've learned now that I don't want to force anything. And I'm just, when it comes to me, it comes to me. And
I have to write it down. Otherwise it's gone. It feels like it's like a gift for a moment for me. And then if I don't put it down, then, I have to wait for the next gift.
right. And I feel so like wiped out when that happens, because it was a good idea.
Oh gosh. You know? It's just like, yes, I know. Cause yeah. I keep going, like I'll run it through my head over and over and over again, hoping that I can hang on to it until I can put it down someplace. But then it just like, it just goes too late.
Yeah. I actually wrote a poem about that in one of the books I had, that I was in the car driving and I came up with an idea. And then when I pulled over, I forgot it. I felt like it was a great idea, and I lost it. So it's very disappointing when that happens.
Well, use the recorder on your phone, just click it and just talk it into it, as a quick memo to yourself. That's probably
it's
one way to do that.
It's not always convenient in the shower.
Well, that's,
yeah. Well, that's a great idea. I got to start doing that when I get the opportunity.
Well, we'd love to hear another piece, if you wouldn't mind, Orion.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, this one is kind of goes on a departure of what the book is about, but I kind of just like it. I want to read this one too. It's called "Had It Then I Didn't." It was one of the first ones that I wrote for, but it's a quirky, odd book quirky odd poem, let's say.
Right.
So it's called "Had It Then I Didn't." Moving forward, fluid motion, top of the world feeling, a you can't touch this attitude. Rounding the corner, winning a match, head in the cloud, feet on the ground. I balance in the middle between intellect and psychosis, a predicament I most likely created. I often marvel how I've made it this far. I ask the world, who would think boasting isn't the right avenue to take? Because here comes my confidence brooding over the nonsense and noise, but it's a slip and the fall of overconfidence that takes it all for the win. I looked down the road at all the potholes and speed bumps and wonder how I landed in the middle of the predicament I most likely created. I'm surprised that I haven't yet fallen into my own abyss of arrogance and incompetence. With my tail between my legs, I whining like a dog who's been wronged, even though my recorded history lays out the entire scenario, naming me the miscreant of my demise. I pretend it's someone else's fault, even though everybody knows it's a lie. I'm overly optimistic, thinking I'm ahead when half of my mind is rarely ever logical and the other half is on permanent sabbatical. Clearly no one knows but me, and it's my arrogance that believes I have nothing left to learn, only to realize I haven't learned anything worthwhile. It's a story of I hadn't, then I didn't. Usually it's a moment that feels like an eternity when I'm in it. All I know is I might be closer to knowing when to shut up before I go too far. So progress, I guess.
Oh, I love it. Half my mind is rarely logical, then the other half is on permanent sabbatical. Is that it?
Yeah. So that's one of those times where you're just like, what am I doing? But
there was also another line that I really liked from Smile, which was, I visited my dead end before, but it's always changing. That was really.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad. I never hear that from anybody, which I like the feedback too, because, my wife doesn't seem to want to make my ego grow any more than it already is. So,
every single poem in this collection, everybody's been there. I mean, with Shadow, I've shed a lot of skin. I mean, boy, it's just...
I don't mean to brag. I'm not bragging, I hope, but I feel like I really got this one right for once. So I'm really proud of it.
That's great.
Yeah, you should be.
Thank you.
You know, we're coming up in about our final minute and a half here, Ryan. So first of all, I just want to give you a chance to see you have any events coming up and, let's talk about that. And then also like how people can find your work and, where you're going to release it. Are you going to have a public release of your event or something like that?
Yeah. I have March 25th, 2025 is the release date of this book. March 29th, in Chesterton, Running Vines in the Cellar, which is a very cool place to have.
Right.
It's 4 to 6:30. That's when the reading is going to be there. And then in the Bauer Center, April 19th, I also have a reading from 2 to 4, almost the same, book and everything too. So.
And where can they, when will they be able to purchase it? Just at these events? Or are you going to have it in bookstores or Amazon or anything like that?
Yeah, it's going to be on Amazon. I'm also going to have about 20 to 30 copies with me on both of the readings. So.
Excellent. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Ryan, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your poetry and your work. Ryan Steinbeck was born in Waukegan, Illinois, but now in Chesterton, and he'll be releasing his new book of poetry, Loss, Aging, Gratitude, and Acceptance, the end of March here. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your arts journey.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for the collection.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell it to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker, and for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air. Show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the